For those that have noticed, I'm using what the Army calls field expedient gavel. It is better known as a stapler, but today it will be a gavel. Call to order the Senate Resources and House Special Committee on Oil and Gas. The time is 1:07. We have with us from the Senate Senator Wagner, Senator Wilkowski, Senator McGuire, Senator Green, and Huggins. We have two members from the Senate that will not be here today. Senator Stebbins is excused, and Senator Stevens is excused. And Representative Corning, would you like to introduce the House members?
Thank you again for the opportunity to be able to share this meeting with you. Senator Huggins, we have with us Representative Mike Dugan, Scott Kawasaki, and myself, Dick Corning, and Nancy Dahlstrom, as well as Kurt Olson, who are supposed to be calling in. They're somewhere online at the moment, and we should be expecting the other two members as well from the Oil and Gas Committee. Thank you.
Do that again. So
yes,
it's on the record.
Thank you, Representative Corning. The purpose of today's meeting is the second of at least two public testimony sessions we're having jointly with the House for, number one, for us to hear the same message from our constituents and Alaskans more particularly, and so that it will assist us as we go through the thought process in dealing with AGEA. And the meeting today will be from 1 to 3. We have some people online at this point in time. When the number of people diminish, then we will call a halt to the meeting. Are there any questions this time before we proceed with testimony? Okay, with that, from North Pole, we have Mr. Merrick Pierce.
Good afternoon, Chairman. Thank you very much for the opportunity to participate. I have to compliment those of you that have been involved with this process. The best discussion I've heard from the legislature regarding AGEA revolves around growing recognition that major oil producers are likely to engage in litigation to prevent gasoline projects as a method of hampering competition when if a project licensee is anybody but the big producers. And I think that's a fair assumption. The legal department of Exxon and most corporations, it's not used to fight for truth, justice, and the American way, but simply as a profit center. And if filing frivolous lawsuits against Alaska to delay the gas pipeline project prevents competitors from bringing gas to lower 48 or overseas markets, companies like Exxon will do so to restrict supplies and increase their bottom line. And I think to reduce the likelihood of litigation and delay and the loss of jobs and significant revenue for Alaska, I encourage you to evaluate whether the inducement provisions within AGEA could be made optional at the discretion of the potential licensee at the time of initial application. And this should bring about a couple of clear benefits for Alaska. First, I think in a competitive environment, applicants may decide they do not need, for example, a 10-year exemption on natural gas, tax exemption. Second, this gives the applicant the choice of deciding what, if any, inducements they receive are worth the risk of having their project delayed by, say, Exxon's litigation. Indeed, we have already heard some applicants, like Exxon, demand MIRED unconstitutional concessions from Alaska, such as a 30 to 45 year lock on oil and gas taxation. And other voter approved entities like the Alaska Gasoline Port Authority tell us they need no such concessions. All they ask for is access to the natural gas. And this makes it rather obvious a multinational corporation like Exxon doesn't want the level playing field among AGEA applicants. The testimony you've heard from Big Oil this week, they've already reiterated they want the legislature to surrender the power of taxation for them to even consider a gas pipeline project. And unless the legislature is willing to amend the Constitution, which I don't think is very likely or desirable, it doesn't look like Big Oil is serious about a gas pipeline project. Big Oil simply wants its sycophants to stymie Governor Palin's attempt to create a level, fair playing field. In fact, I have to tell you, on a personal note, many of us already have a great deal of unease and mistrust of members of the legislature who are under investigation by the Public Integrity Section of the Department of Justice who are involved with writing oil and gas legislation. And then earlier this week, we listened to a member of the House, Representative Ramirez, slight the Alaska Gasoline Port Authority project that his constituents overwhelmingly voted for. And then days later, obsequiously announced to Exxon's lobbyists before the Oil and Gas Committee how proud he was to be an Exxon shareholder. I'll tell you what, this type of conflict, this huge conflict of interest, does nothing to engender respect for the already damaged reputation and credibility of the legislature. So I'll conclude by reiterating that you should pay attention to the voters' overwhelming preference for Governor Palin, who was the one candidate who promised trust and transparency during the election and is delivering on that promise with the GEO, a process where all applicants have the equal footing to apply, an approach diametrically opposite of what Frank Murkowski's failed good old boy scheme was all about. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Pierce. Any questions from any of the committee members, Mr. Pierce? Okay, and thank you again.
Thank you.
And from Palmer, Mr. Jim Sykes. Jim, welcome.
Thank you very much, Senator Huggins, and thank you to the committee. My name is Jim Sykes, P.O. Box 696 Palmer. I've tracked the oil and gas industry for many years, and I would like to compliment the people at the Department of Natural Resources, the commissioner and his staff, for coming forth with, I think, a very good idea of a bill. I don't think it's perfect, but I think that we're on the right track at long, long last. I do have some concerns that I would like to address. One of the concerns I have is how the project will be evaluated. A lot of people have raised this, and I think that a real clear matrix of how the projects, different projects will be evaluated and weighted and ultimately approved should be part of the process, although it probably can't be part of the bill. It's something that the bill might mandate. The previous speaker did raise a good point. I was going to make it in terms of the 10-year tax rate and in terms of the inducements. I think they should be made flexible. Maybe the language should be up to 10 years and instead of mandating a 10-year. I was a little bit uncomfortable to hear Exxon's representative before the legislature the other day say they still wanted for 30 or 45 years. And I just don't think that's in the cards. And I don't believe that the major oil companies want to develop Alaska gas because our gas will be competitive with gas they are importing from other regions in the world. And so I think that they just want to kind of hold our gas hostage until they get the gas out of the more dangerous areas of the world, and they can come back to good old safe Alaska and develop it when they feel like it. I think that we have to make sure that this first open season is successful, and I think one of the ways that we can do that is to leave the options open, just wide open in terms of the state's flexibility and the kind of contract that we're willing to go. We can have a ceiling on what we're going to do, a ceiling of 10 years, a ceiling of $500 million, but those inducements may not be appropriate depending upon what is needed. I think we have to have the backbone to do what Governor Hickel did with the oil industry years ago at Prudhoe Bay. They were dragging their feet then, and he told them point blank, if you don't drill, I will. And I think that that's the kind of attitude that we have to approach this with. It's our gas, and now that the Point Thompson unit has been dissolved, it really is our gas, and we've got gas in Prudhoe Bay we can use, we've got gas at Point Thompson. We have control of the gas. Now you say, well, Exxon may litigate this forever. Well, I hope that if Exxon litigates, number one, they won't win. Number two, if they do win, I hope the state court requires that the state pay Exxon at least as quickly as they've developed our gas and as quickly as they've paid the court settlement against them over the Exxon Valdez. That would be 30 years for not developing our gas plus 15 for not paying Valdez. 45 years we'd have to pay Exxon back. I think that would be fair. Let's see, there was one other thing. Oh, yeah, the another concern that I have is the triple damages part. On the part of the state would have to pay a contract potential triple damages. I've heard the explanation from DNR on this, and it seems to make some sense, but I think it bears closer examination because it seems like a fairly sharp-eyed accountant somewhere could actually take advantage of the money the state would have to fork out under damages, and it would also delay the project. And I don't think either of these things are desirable. So if they can be avoided or made flexible or something like that, I'd like, it's a point that I don't know how to resolve myself, but it does, I think, bear further examination. And I guess that's about all I've got to say. I think we're really headed on the right way. I think that there's demand for our gas right now in terms of LNGs. So the people that are building the expansions on the West Slope, they want Alaska gas. And if we can get it to them, I think that we ought to try and do that. my own analysis of the TransCanada, and I think that line should be built, but I believe it's going to be 10 to 15 years if people want to do it, and I'm not convinced any of the three majors want to do it. So I think that once we get gas moving through and make the Point Thompson and Prudhoe Bay gas available and say, this gas is available right now, and make sure a project is doable, economic, the state has control, and all the other good things we've been wishing for all these years, get something moving, the majors will be forced to join the project. Because once the gas is flowing, they can't look their shareholders in the face and say, gee, it's not economical. We don't have a way to move this gas because it won't be stranded in any sense. And I think that's the kind of pressure, the kind of leverage, the kind of carrot that's going to be good for everybody, the state of Alaska and the oil companies in the very end. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, and I thank you very much for deliberating this and taking a good close look at it.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Are there any questions or comments on Jim's testimony? Hearing none, we will now go to Gene Woods in Mat-Su. Gene? Hello, Mrs. Woods, are you there? While we're trying to get Ms. Woods on the line, I'd just like to welcome Representative Ralph Samuels, who's with us at the table, and Representative Harry Crawford is with us in the gallery, I guess would be the appropriate term. Welcome. Oh, Gene Woods, are you there? Okay, we will go to Fairbanks, Mr. Zeb Woodman.
Hi, my name is Zeb Woodman. I'm a member of the Labor's Local 942 in Fairbanks, and I want to talk today about a project labor agreement and the needs for one in the AGEA legislation. I'm looking for some language, possibly, that would give Alaskan hire guarantees. And also, we need predictability. If Alaskans are going to be trained for these jobs, we need to know how many workers, when the line is going to be built, and what type of material that these folks are going to need to be trained in. And we need enough time to train rural Alaskans to take these jobs. We're also like to see some consistency in wages and conditions to level the playing field between union and non-union workers and contractors. That way, union or non-union, they're playing on the same field, and the wages and conditions will be consistent, and I believe that will help Alaskan hire. And I'll be willing to entertain any questions.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Woodman. Any questions or comments on Mr. Woodman's? Well, thank you, Mr. Woodman. We will now go back to Mat-Su and Mrs. Jean Woods.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ms. Woods.
Thank you for this opportunity to testify. Having read the Senate Bill 104 and the accompanying letter to President of the Senate, Light Arena, a couple of times, and I've also read what the print media has had to say, along with watching committee hearings on Gavel to Gavel, I have a couple of observations and some questions. One, there's no doubt of the need for gas for in-state use. We need to work with the producers because the state needs the gas in the pipeline. They need some certainty about taxes and utility terms. I have a lot of questions regarding your tariff and the rolled-in pricing, but my biggest concern is the selection of the winner. The two commissioners select the winner, and then we have a 60-day public hearing period. Then the legislature has only 30 days to disapprove. I think that the legislature needs longer time, and I'm curious as to why the word disapprove is used. My other question is, should it be open competition and the market making the decision of who gets the license? And I want you also to keep in mind, industry takes the risk, and you politicians will be unelected if things don't go well. I think so far the committee hearings have been well conducted and good questions have been answered, and I think we will have a gas line. I have faith in you.
Thank you, Mrs. Woods. We appreciate very much, and please tell Noel a good day for us. Are there questions or comments on Mrs. Woods' testimony? And again, thank you, Gene. We appreciate your testimony. Let's go now to Anchorage, to Mr. Bob Morgo.
Thank you, Chairman Huggins and Chairman Coring, for the opportunity to and the other committee members for allowing me to testify. My name is Bob Morgo. I'm the District 6 representative for the Operating Engineers Local 302 in Anchorage. And a little bit about Local 302. Local 302 represents nearly 4,000 heavy equipment operators, mechanics, and oilers in the state of Alaska, and nearly 6,000 in the state of Washington. Our trade specializes in the construction of heavy highways, bridges, dams, tunnels, and pipeline-type work. Our international consists of over 200 locals nationwide, including Canada, with more than 400,000 workers. And I believe that the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act must have strong language up front requiring the negotiation of a project labor agreement with the Alaska Building Trades and the entity licensed to build our gas line. I've got some bullet points here of what I consider the advantages of a project labor agreement, just some of the advantages, and one would be to legally ensure local hire, require minority hire, especially our rural native population with hard number percentages, require apprenticeship utilization, again with hard number percentages. The building trades brings with it the in-state training opportunities, the utilization of the building trades pre-existing training centers for journeyman skill improvement and apprenticeship training, with the eventual use of the proposed regional pipeline training center in Fairbanks for more specific skill improvement. The project builder has a ready supply of skilled and trained workers throughout the building trades, quick resolution of any job site disputes, expedited procedure to resolve any labor disputes through the defined grievance procedures, no strike, lockout, or work slowdown language defined in the project language, standardized working conditions throughout the duration of the project, and known labor costs for all classifications of workers. These things, along with many others, will be negotiated into a project labor agreement. I believe strong language in AGEA requiring a project labor agreement, along with the licensee being required to negotiate with the building trades, gives many of our local Alaska workers a chance for employment first, thus having the potential, in my eyes, of getting it done right this time. The oil line 30 years ago, which incidentally I participated in for 2 years, was manned predominantly from outside workers, and due to the specific skills required, many will still be employed from other states. But we now have the ability and time frame to train and prepare more of our own Alaskans if we think and act responsibly this time. Thanks again for the opportunity to testify.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Morgeau. Any questions or comments on Mr. Morgeau's testimony? Thank you again. Next, we will go to Fairbanks, to Mr. James Jingler. Mr. Jingler, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. Thanks for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is James Jingler. I support a PLA. I'm an electrical instructor at the Corn Fine Training Center for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, located our local 1547. The Inside Wireman Apprenticeship Training Program in Fairbanks. I'm a longtime advocate of education for the betterment of Alaskans having 12 years of electronics experience with the Alaska Air National Guard, holding an associate's in an airframe and power plant, a bachelor's in professional aeronautics, and currently working towards a master's in information technology. I'm a career electrician responsible for the development and education of wireman apprentices who will one day fill the roles of journeymen. My classes are filled with people with varying ethnic backgrounds, both men and women. Overall, Alaska's union-based apprenticeship training programs have set the high standards of education and training and continually raise the bar. Our state register programs require thousands of hours of closely supervised on-the-job training, plus additional 1,000 hours or more of related classroom shop instruction, providing a highly skilled labor pool from the union hiring halls. Under Title 36, all state construction projects over $2,000 are subject to paying the prevailing wage in accordance with the Davis-Bacon Act. Union and non-union alike must pay this rate. Union apprenticeship programs ensure lower cost apprentice availability. Non-union contractors often have to pay full journeyman rate for non-skilled workers because they have no apprenticeship training program or have training programs that neither train or provide the benefits to the level of those represented by the unions. Also, union apprenticeship programs mean easier tracking of legal compliance, better quality apprentices, reducing labor costs, and our safety training programs reduce costs even further by limiting risk associated with construction hazards. What does this do for a PLA? First, it provides predictability. The union-based training programs promote timely and successful project completion by ensuring all adequate supply of skilled craft personnel for all trades for full term of the project. This facilitates sound project planning by supplying project owners with predictable labor costs. PLA or project labor agreements give the customer a value of guarantee of quality free of defects for years to come. Examples of PLAs around the United States can be seen in Disney World, Cape Kennedy Space Station, and in our state, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, Fort Greely's Missile Defense System, and the King Salmon Votex Center. In conclusion, a project labor agreement provides systemized labor terms, saving time and money by not having to renegotiate terms for each subcontractor. Let's please negotiate a project labor agreement. Thank you for your time, and once again, for the opportunity to testify.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Jingler, and we appreciate your testimony. Any questions or comments on Mr. Jingler's testimony? And next, we will go to Anchorage to Ms. Stephanie Thompson.
Chairman Huggins and Chairman Coring, thank you for the opportunity to offer testimony on an issue that is extremely important to myself and of other Alaskans. My name is Stephanie Thompson. I am an indentured first-year apprentice in the NECA IBEW apprenticeship program. I am currently being trained to be ready for tomorrow's pipeline. Our union programs are giving me and all of my fellow apprentices the tools we'll need to be capable professionals and leave the producers and contractors with no doubt when it comes to predicting the efficiency and the skills of the workforce on this project. I receive 320 hours a year of hands-on and instruction-led curriculum. I am receiving top-notch on-the-job training in all facets of my trade by well-trained, experienced journeymen. A project labor agreement on the gas pipeline will guarantee the producers and contractors have a relationship with the best craft training programs in this state, who are currently producing a majority of the workforce with the skills necessary to build an Alaska gas pipeline. I was in a non-union apprenticeship program at the ABC and was very disappointed with the lack of training and oversight I received. There were no instructors or classrooms. I was given a very rudimentary correspondence book with oversight, and the oversight I received working for VICO was non-existent. When I had the opportunity to get into the IBEW apprenticeship program, I jumped at it. I could not be happier, unless, of course, you can see fit to put a PLA into the AGEA legislation to ensure that qualified Alaskans in bona fide training programs will go to work on this, the most critical project ever facing our state. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Stephanie, and we appreciate hearing from you there in Anchorage. Questions or comments to Stephanie? Okay, we will go back now to Fairbanks to Mr. Gary Johnson.
Thank you. My name is Gary Johnson. My address is P.O. Box 81167 Fairbanks. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to testify, and I'd like to begin by just saying that I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was raised here in Fairbanks. I had opportunity to attend schools here. My employment history, I had the opportunity to work for the state of Alaska for 20 years in as an Alaska State Trooper, and I also had the opportunity to travel the state to see a variety of areas and meet a lot of Alaska's great people. At this time, I'm an apprentice in the IBEW Electrical Training Program. I'm at the Cornfine Training Center here in Fairbanks, and I'd like to echo the statements of the previous testimony that the program is well-structured. I also had the opportunity to sign up and be qualified under the ABC program. I never got an opportunity to work under that program. The reason, I have no idea, so I won't make guesses as to how that occurred, but the organization that I saw in that program was definitely lacking. The instruction through the IBEW is excellent. I know that they are structured to offer opportunities for training to people who aren't in the Fairbanks area, people who I've known and met in the Nome, also in Southeast Alaska, have come to the program here in Fairbanks for training. I think that it's going to be important that if the pipeline is built, that a project labor agreement is in place, and it does provide for opportunity for access to the jobs for people throughout the state, and I would hope that the testimony that has come forth so far it gives you some indication as to the current preparation that has been made, and with some forewarning, I'm certain that we can be completely prepared to provide excellent training for the construction of this pipeline. I've had an opportunity to visit and speak with legislators over other issues in Juneau when I was working for the state, and I'm confident that you will give us a fair hearing and that you will do what's right for the people of the state of Alaska. And thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions or comments to Mr. Johnson? And well, thank you again, Mr. Johnson. We now will go to Anchorage, Mr. John Garrett.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon.
My name is John Garrett, and I'm the business manager of Sheet Metal Workers Local Union 23. And I'm here to speak in favor of a project labor agreement for the gas pipeline project. Sheet metal workers have been chartered in Alaska since 1955. And we've got training centers spread throughout the state, and we've got the infrastructure and the ability to ramp up our training programs at will, and we look forward to building this project, doing it the right way. We're very proud of the fact that we've got we more than exceed 90% hire of Alaskans.
Hello?
And, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Hello? Excuse me. Mr. Garrett, go ahead, please. We had some interruption there for a moment, but continue.
Sorry about that. Let's see, where did I leave off? We're very proud of the fact that we've got a relationship with the Alaska Works Partnership to reach out to rural Alaskans, and we're very proud of the fact that we have our outreach program with Helmets to Hard Hats, that we're doing the best job that we can to employ our veterans to come back from Iraq. And we look forward to building this gas pipeline project, and with the support of a project labor agreement, we believe we can do it the right way. Thank you very much.
And thank you very much, Mr. Garrett. Comments or questions, Mr. Garrett's testimony? And next we will go, thank you again. Once we will go back to Fairbanks, Mr. Doug Buckley. Doug, you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can. Put yourself on the record, please, Doug.
My name's Doug Buckley. I'm a 30-year resident of Alaska. I'm a member of the 1547 local here of the IBEW in Fairbanks. And I'd just like to thank the chairman and the legislatures for letting us address you today. And I just came here to reiterate my, I'd like to just reiterate my thinking about the necessity of a project labor agreement for this gas pipeline. If you want to get quality workers, Alaska workers, take care of the people of Alaska, then I hope that the legislature and the governor will make a PLA a non-negotiable item in this new agreement. We must have a PLA to get this pipeline built. And I thanks for your time.
And thank you, Mr. Buckley. We appreciate it very much. Questions or comments from Mr. Buckley? And again, thank you, Mr. Buckley. We'll now go back to Anchorage to Mr. Mike Kinney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, indeed. I begin by thanking the committee for affording myself and all Alaskans the opportunity to share their thoughts on AGIA, and really from a policy rather than a technical point of view. It is much appreciated by all of us. It seems that the process laid out by AGIA is not only different by degree from the process we had in 2005 during the contract negotiations. It's a whole different kind of process. I think Governor Palin has done a great service to the state by developing this process, by developing and putting into play this legislation. It allows Alaskans transparency to see and to determine for themselves which of the various competing projects would be best for the maximum benefit of the citizens. Some of my thoughts about AGIA include the $500 million matching fund arrangement to cover startup expenses. I look at that as an investment in Alaska's future. This is something that will return dividends to our descendants for decades and decades to come. If it's necessary, if some of the entities do not desire to have this matching funds, then maybe there should be a provision in AGIA to accommodate those entities. We've had a chance in 2005 on one of the projects on the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority project. There was a lot of scrutiny paid to issues such as the Jones Act, FERC, the IRS exemption. There was a half a dozen or more issues that were discussed and brought out. On the contrary, with the Canadian route, it was almost as if that gas line ended at the Alaskan border. There wasn't any kind of light shed upon the problems that can be expected in Canada. This is a pipeline that runs the Canadian pipeline for the Alaska gas runs 1,746 miles to Alberta. That is by far the biggest portion of the pipeline. It runs through a sovereignty, a territorial sovereignty, two provinces, a federal government, and the First Nation. There's questions about treaties. There are environmental issues. There is just a slew of political happenings that may or may not be even more intense 5 years from now. Those are problems that, while not insoluble, certainly will take time. And I think the dimension of time is the most important factor that we have. And I say that from two points of view. Number one, there's going to be a limited opportunity for Alaskan gas to be liquefied and to get the West Coast market or Pacific Rim market. At some point, the door will be closed. We will no longer have the market for LNG. My understanding is now that there is a market. The market will speak. But there may not be that market 12 months, 14 months from now. It's obvious that there was a study done by the producers that said LNG wasn't viable, didn't make enough on the West Coast. And I don't disagree. I think from their point of view, as far as maximizing income, maximizing return for their stockholders, it may well be that it's better for them to bring their gas over from Sakhalin or from Australia or Indonesia to our West Coast. On the other hand, LNG may be quite viable if done by an Alaskan entity, such as the Port Authority or ANGA. So that's a window of opportunity that won't forever. And if we get into the place that we were at 2 years ago, we lost all of our leverage. We didn't really have, from my point of view, leverage in the negotiations with the producers. Just for the leverage point alone, it's important that our resource is developed, and if at all possible, by the hometown team, so to speak. We don't have any other stock warehouses of gas, whereas Exxon, BP, ConocoPhillips have got major projects throughout the world that they can either start developing or have developed. We've got Alaska's development, and that's our only development. We feel that a certain amount of time has been spent worrying about the supply of gas that these producers have, the North Slope. There's a fear that's been expressed that there will be legal action taken by Exxon, that they'll demonstrate once again how they can utilize the tactic of delay to offset any decision that they don't like. I think that's a very real possibility, but I also believe that it's better to adjudicate these issues in American and Alaskan courts rather than have Imperial Oil take on this project in Canada, where it may be in a territorial court or a provincial court or in Ottawa. If there has to be, and there undoubtedly will be, legal challenges on probably various issues, much better to have an all-Alaskan and keep it in-house, so to speak, rather than the uncertainty of the Canadian legal system. We would be far ahead by doing that. And that's all with the provision that, as you look at these proposals, that the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority is who they say it is, and the project is as viable as they say it is. I don't have any doubts that it will turn out to be that way. So I guess I'll leave with the idea that time is of the utmost, and it's my opinion that that alone puts an all-Alaska solution at the forefront. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kenny. Are there any questions or comments from Mr. Kenny? Okay, next we will go to Mr. Bill Warren in Nikiski. Mr. Warren, can you hear me?
Hello.
Good afternoon. Could you put yourself on the record, and we'll be happy to hear your testimony, sir.
Yes, sir. William Warren. I'm a 55-year resident of Alaska. I reside in Nikiski, Alaska. I'm a retired member of Local 367, the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters. And I have a large family here in Alaska, and I've done very well at my trade, and I'm hoping that you will have a project agreement with the building trades, much like the TAPS, which I worked on. I was disappointed in the testimony that Exxon gave yesterday, though not surprised, and the complexities of going to Alberta and maybe to Chicago and all the things that they want to do are beyond me, and I have to rest upon your expertise to wade through that. But I am a strong advocate for in-state Alaska use right away. And I think we have a good plan through Mr. Hines with ANGDA and the Alaska Gas Management Marketing System. And I believe that we can enter the LNG contracts with the West Coast to monetize our in-state use for our homes and small businesses, which we are in dire need because of the declining Cook Inlet gas reserves. And I too think that that we have to get on this right away. And if it's a dual idea of getting gas to market, one would be the interstate use and one the producer's way, away down the line or whatever they want to do. But I feel the split's necessary because of how they are going to approach what they want to do and what want to accomplish. So with that, I'm very supportive of AGEA and what you people are doing, and thank you for letting me testify today.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Warren, and we're always proud to hear from longtime Alaskans. Questions or comments from Mr. Warren? Okay, and we will now go back to Anchorage. Mr. Paul Kendall. And Paul, as you're putting yourself on the record, we do have a written copy of your testimony.
Well, can you hear me okay?
I hear you very well.
I pushed the mute button, I'm not sure if it works. Well, you know, first of all, let me begin off in a different way. I want to pay particular attention to Ms. McGuire and Ms. Green and the other ladies there, and my personal recognition for their accomplishments. First of all, I'm a little bit scared here. I'm going to read something off more in part and parcel bullet points, so if it's a little bit disconnected, I'll try to pause if I just briefly. First, thank you for the opportunity to participate in this historical moment with my opinions. It seems to me it is imperative that our leaders maintain a strong leadership role and conviction, that we are the ones in control here. We are the source of the flow, and it will not flow unless we go or say go. It cannot become one of a wounded cut from the herd. I'm very concerned about that, and so far you're just all doing, I think, wonderful. I hope someone is keeping track of these problems we're seeing inferred, dodged, and intimidated or intimated, and we should be correcting any contract defects or sections that appear to be defective at this time. And for God's sake, please change the meeting room's cameras so that we can see the faces of the testimonials being given. There is no excuse for that except obvious disregard for public needs and their desire to participate. It is my belief that Mr. Matthew, I would call him a mesmerizer or a hypnotist. He is here to tell you nothing except they are in charge. I have to think Mr. Ramos's remark about Ford was pretty cute, and I think it's applicable. It is Mr. Matthew's job, in my opinion, to keep the attitude in line to have you talk in their constructs of dialogue and direction. It is my belief that you're attempting to be being surrounded. There's a big difference between being cornered and being surrounded. And when you look at the might and the will and the implications of these producers, along with FERC, the people who work under them and their distribution networks, there is a possibility of being surrounded. So on that case, keeping that in mind, I sent you, one of the papers I sent you was a contractual obligation to offer to work for free for 30 days. The reason I offer that is not because I'm not sound of mind. It is because I want to be the first man in the history of this project to offer to work for free for 30 days, keeping in mind that the unions are at the top of my consideration. The reason I offer that is because I want to use it into a lead, and that lead is this. It is my belief, based upon the preliminary discussions with the major producers, I can only assume that Alaska's best position may be to call on its own resources and to initiate a type of old-fashioned history-making or farm-raising, in this case, a pipe-laying event. I believe you may have to initiate design and construction of a sovereign line or two from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez in order to circumvent what appears to be some form of reluctance by the major producers to partnership with the state of Alaska and or others outside of their choice. When you look at the number of years until a successful Canadian line would start to flow, along with some of the while we're waiting out-of-pocket costs and impacts to Alaska, please consider this. Any project projected 10 to 15 years out is a gamble under the Alaska in-kind gas just sitting there for 10 to 15 years. The cost to Alaskan citizens while we are paying for 10 years or more of gas locally, the rising cost of materials during waiting for possible large lines, the potential unpredictable weather patterns, cold streaks, etc., the possibility of a new source of energy superseding the market, complex intermingling of worldwide gas suppliers' impact. I believe it may behoove Alaska to simply let the producers run on their own, so to speak, on some conditions, leverage its interest income on a permanent fund income, and use its value along with other innovative cost-cutting means, which is where my offer comes in at, to keep the cost of the project low enough so as to have a minimal risk to its permanent fund keep low-cost gas to its citizens and stimulate a more immediate and productive interest in Alaska's gas development based on accelerated output of the 1/8 share of gas. In conclusion, I'll sum up here the 7 points. It is my belief that you need to chest it up, stop chasing the cat in the dark room. You need to realize greed and fear are the most devastating of all compulsions and distort nearly every perception, expectation, which naturally determines a person's attitude. I think you should just stop and pause. You need to clean it all up right now, just like a dirty house or garage. You need to announce that you will move to Anchorage for the remainder of the year. Governor Palin needs to advise the public of any special sessions in the future be held in Anchorage. You need to hold a meeting and declare a need to finance you guys with salaries of $50,000 per year. You need to be here to get into the fray or production mode so that we can make things happen. You are an absentee government being in Juneau. We all know that, except you guys. I retract that, except you guys. But we're all very well aware you're trying to hard, but you are, in essence, a government in absenteeism. You need to empower the local gas alliance and Port Authority, the good people, with capital and manpower to begin the immediate development of a sovereign line. Governor Palin needs to have you guys issue a proclamation calling for an immediate funding made available to call for notification that Alaska is seeking direct discussions for the purpose
Hello,
of...
Hello, Mr. Kendall.
Yes.
Yeah, Charlie Huggins here. Could you wrap up in the next 30 seconds, please?
I certainly can. That last two. Thank you so much for any time I may have gone over. Let's see, Governor needs to issue a proclamation. You need to come home to your people and take care of business. This isn't some hangout at the local retreat and spa. Contemplate the nature of events. Time to build your state, burn the midnight oil, tell the family you need their support because you're going to work hard. Let's get on. Where is that Alaska that loves freedoms and the will not to submit to the fear? Where is this, my rights end where yours begin? And I'm sure I've listened things out. And I want to thank you for the work you're doing. Rather than end on a negative note, I know it's very, very difficult. And I'm sure you're working hard for us. But I think they're attempting to surround you in some manner or some means. And I think the only way to do that is to move on the Prudhoe Bay as soon as possible for the in-kind sovereign line. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kendall. And we appreciate hearing from you again. And we appreciate your written testimony in addition. Questions or comments from Mr. Kendall? Hearing none, we will now go to Mr. Dan Apted in Anchorage. Dan, are you there?
Now can you hear me?
Can hear you loud and clear.
Super. You already know my name is Dan Apted. I'm not a member of any oil and gas group. I'm not a member. I don't have a dog in the fight, so to speak, on this oil and gas fray that's going on to build a gas pipeline. I'm against any attempt by the oil companies to enact any really long-term structure in the tax code that would lock in a tax rate. I think that it's wrong for one group of legislators to legislate what the taxes can be collected by a future group of legislators. So I hope you'll consider that long and hard before you make any agreement. My biggest concern with the oil or with the gas pipeline isn't so much that it happen or not happen, because I think it'll happen if the economics are there, and I think there's a really good opportunity or a good chance that it won't happen because of all the problems that have been addressed by numerous people. You know all the problems with the project. I want to see if you guys will put something in the proposal that you're looking at to fund a state study of alternative methods of getting gas to market. It's not self-evident, looking at it from the outside, that a railroad could carry natural gas to market as inexpensively as a gas pipeline could. But the truth is, in a half hour of rail time, a railroad can haul the same amount of gas that the gas pipeline they're talking about building will haul in 24 hours. We have a lot of different commodities in Alaska that need to go to market. And if we build a railroad, which will cost about half or less than half of what it's going to cost to build the gas pipeline, we then have the ability to ship coal and zinc and bauxite and limestone and all the different commodities that we have here in huge quantities to the lower 48. We likewise have the ability to connect our Pacific ports to the Atlantic ports via a rail link that will create a rail equivalent of the Northwest Passage. There's a huge amount of money that can be made by the state of Alaska in the form of tariffs. We're allowing people to connect up to a railroad that connects the ports of Seward or Whittier or Anchorage or Wasilla or wherever to this rail link that would be connected to the Canadian rail system and then go on to the ports in Newfoundland and the ports in Boston, New York, wherever. If we build this a railroad link, we can haul the natural gas to market, and by the way, it will cost less than half on a per thousand cubic foot basis to haul natural gas by rail than it will to haul it in the gas pipeline. The major reason being that when you build this gas pipeline, the commodity gas has to pay for the entire thing. If you put it on a rail link and it's just one of the commodities that's carried on the railroad, there are a lot of commodities that can pay up to pay the building cost for the entire project. When you run the numbers, it looks like, and really, I'm a computer geek. I'm not someone whose word you can trust on this. You need accountants, you need lawyers, you need engineers, you need a lot of other people other than a guy that can run an internet connection to run these numbers. But it looks like by rail, it'll run about $1.25 to $1.35 per thousand cubic feet of gas landed on the other end, where with the gas pipeline, it's going to run at least $2.50 per thousand cubic feet to land that gas. And it's probably more than that because the cost of building the pipe goes up every month that we sit around and don't do it. If we build the railroad, we have all these different commodities that can do it. And the big one, like I say, is what's called intermodal freight, where they drop off the freight that's going to Germany from South Korea, for instance, at a port in Seward, and it gets transported to Newfoundland and then goes on to Germany. They cut 7,000 miles off of the trip. They'll pay big money to get 7,000 miles of the distance off. Their product gets there quicker, their product gets there cheaper. It doesn't have to go through the Panama Canal and pay the huge tariffs that are imposed down there. There's a lot of things we can do if we build a railroad. So at the very least, I'd like you to consider a plan B, if you will, for the gas. That'd be by a railroad, or another one that's come to play here recently is the idea that you could build insulated or vacuum-contained pipes and ship liquefied natural gas all the way to the East Coast for a lot less money than what they can ship the gas, the natural gas that has not been liquefied. There's a lot of other opportunities that haven't been studied, and I'd like to see the state hire real experts, not a computer geek that sits and has a fit over the lack of motion by our government, but real experts to study the alternatives to the gas pipeline and not just take the word of the gas experts who say, nah, it won't work, and just they don't have anything to back it up with. And that's about all I've got to say.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Apted, for your very thoughtful testimony. Your questions or comments to Mr. Apted? And again, thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you today. We will go now back to Fairbanks to Mr. Jomo Stewart. Mr. Stewart, can you put yourself on the record?
Yes, sir. Before I begin my testimony, I'd like to state for the record that though I am Communications Director for the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority, the Port Authority as yet has not taken an official position on the Gas Line Inducement Act. As such, the comments I'm about to make cannot be taken as those of the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority and must necessarily be construed as mine and mine alone. For the record, my name is Jomo Lee Piash Stewart, and I reside at 1552 21st Avenue, Fairbanks, Alaska. It is a truism that goals determine strategy, since before you can formulate a plan to get what you want, you must first formulate a clear understanding of exactly what it is that you want. Alaskans want, and the Constitution demands, that Alaskans pursue maximum benefit in resource development. But before you can formulate a plan to achieve it, it is necessary that we first define it. The Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act, like the contract that preceded it, contains a list of wants. Alaskan hire provisions, access provisions, mandatory offtake points, and the like. Call them must-haves, call them non-negotiables, call them what you will. In my mind, these are but the latest attempt on the part of Alaska to define in the real world that which in its earliest days it committed itself to always pursue in the ideal, maximum benefit. I say latest attempt because there have been many attempts to define maximum benefit in the past. Governor Murkowski attempted to define it as maximum wellhead value, and judging from the many questions and comments I've heard in committee, had some success in that endeavor. Under our current system, whereby the lion's share of resource development revenues are dispensed through the filter and wealth redistribution mechanism of state government, I can understand why this equating of maximum benefit with maximum dollars directly to the state treasury would be attractive. However, this was not the only definition ever attempted. In point of fact, there does exist in statute an earlier attempt on the part of Alaskan policymakers to define a maximum benefit, a definition, I would argue, that more closely resembles the one a common Alaskan might give you if asked his or her opinion. In the Right-of-Way Leasing Act, under the section titled Legislative Declaration of Policy, it states that the policy of Alaska that the development of a pipeline transportation system be directed to make the maximum contribution to the development of Alaska's human resources, increase the standard of living for its residents, advance existing and potential sectors of its economy, and strengthen free competition in its private enterprise system. This definition is further refined as you read through the section. Ensuring dollars to the Treasury must have been an overarching concern for earlier policymakers, but it is telling that, as they prepare to embark upon their own Trans-Alaska pipeline system, maximizing deposits to the general fund did not impose itself as the sole or even tantamount determining factor for the realization of maximum benefit. It is a truism that goals determine strategy. Alaskans want a gas line, but just as important as the what of a gas line is the why we would want one. As the legislature begins to more fully describe and prioritize the criteria by which it and the administration will evaluate potential pipelines, I ask you to see that the process is for what it is. The latest attempt on the part of Alaskans and Alaska policymakers to define in the real world the constitutional ideal of maximum benefit. To look back through the historical and legal record and see how past Alaskans and Alaskan policymakers sought to define maximum benefit. And to ask your constituents what they themselves hope to derive from the construction of a gas line, what they consider to be maximum benefit for themselves, their children, and their communities. And finally, to consider if perhaps at this juncture in Alaskan history, it might behoove Alaskan policymakers, rather than to perpetuate our current system of dispensing resource development revenues primarily through government, to not fall into the maximum dollars to the general fund trap, and, as was apparently intended by earlier generations, to instead seek to direct, if not most, at least more of the benefits derived from the construction of a gas line directly into the hands of the Alaskan people. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Stewart. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Stewart? Are there people in the audience who would like to testify today? Okay, seeing none. That is the last of the people that we have signed up at this moment. I know for the public, let me just announce that we will continue after this joint session for public testimony. We'll take testimony from ConocoPhillips as a continuation of yesterday. And let me just give the members and everybody in the room, whether you be somebody that's observing or you're part of the staff that's supporting and making this possible, that I know that the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas met yesterday and had a very productive session. We in the Senate.
Want to go shopping with me to Ann Taylor Loft right now?
We in the Senate yesterday had a meeting.
Clicking on it.
From 1:30 to 5:30.
Oh, I might see something here that I like. It is kind of my routine to buy you something when I'm on the boat. Well. What about when I bought you the first?
In any event, you know, we've heard from a number of parties, but yesterday we had a four-hour process that went to 5:30 hearing for producers. We did not get to ConocoPhillips, so we will continue with that at the conclusion of this meeting. And at this point in time, we're going to take about a 10-minute ease to see if we get any other callers, and if not, then we will adjourn this meeting. But on another note, I would just like to point out, in some seriousness and some levity in other cases, Senator McGuire agreed this morning to buy me a Diet Pepsi or Diet Coke based on basketball results in Anchorage. That leads me to this. that, you know, it's really a great time in the families of many Alaskans.
How is the hair and the teeth? What do you need? What do you want to look at? Jeans? Suit up? What do you want to look at? Sweater sale? Ready, set, spring?
But in any event, there are a large number of Alaskans, families, players, fans, you name it, you know, watching some exciting young people do things, both male and female. And in the case of Mat-Su Valley, in the big schools division tonight, will be Wasilla and Colony vying for the state championship. And I might add my son Cody is a member of the Colony team. I saw his picture in the paper the other day, and as a father, I'm very proud of that. But whatever it may be, each of those young people and their families are having a great time. But we do know that at least in the case of the big school boys, the champion will be from Mat-Su. And I leave a chance for Senator McGuire to place a wager on that of a Diet Coke, because she thinks that will be from the Valley. On the other hand, Juneau has something to celebrate too, because Juneau has a girls' team that's in the large school state finals, and I might add that so does the Valley. It seems the Valley's everywhere. In any event, tonight or this afternoon and tonight, two games, Wasilla girls will be playing Juneau girls for the state championship, and then I've already said about the boys, and I just say to you that sort of sad for myself, self-pity, if you will, I can't go see my son play, but we're doing some great things here, and we all have to sacrifice. And I say, on behalf of all Alaskans, thank you for the sacrifice that you are making. And with that, we will take about 10 minute ease to see if there are additional people that call in.
Very nice. Oh, you guys. No, it's incredible. Well, really, in between the girls, three teams.
To hear public testimony, and at this point in time, we have one person in the audience that would like to testify, Mike Notar. Mike, would you come forward, put yourself on the record? And for planning purposes, while Mike is being seated, if there's not additional testimony, we will break after Mike's test. We'll adjourn this meeting, and at 2:45, we will hear from ConocoPhillips. We have to reset the room. Okay, Mike, please proceed.
Chairs Huggins and Coring and committee members, my name is Mike Notar. I reside at 9350 Northland Street here in Juneau, Alaska. I am president of the Juneau and Vicinity Building Trades Council and an assistant business manager for the IBEW Local 1547. In 1993, when considering a government center, the city and borough of Juneau had the wisdom and foresight to stipulate to a PLA on that project because it recognized the benefit, but that project never came to fruition due to Juneau voters turning the project down. But in March of 1996, the Juneau and Vicinity Building Trades Council and the city and borough of Juneau executed its first project labor agreement, and the city has continued to utilize them on several projects subsequent, such as the Bartlett Hospital Administration Building, the Juneau Police Department Building, the Bartlett Hospital Surgery Remodel, Juneau Douglas High School Renovation, Bartlett Hospital 2005, Phases 1 and 2, and now our new Thunder Mountain High School, which is under construction at the current time. These projects together account for more than $120 million in local construction. These PLAs have not been without controversy, though, with those that have been at the very least skeptical about their effectiveness, claiming without foundation that they might make projects exorbitant. These PLAs have provided concessions from all the participating unions that have supplied a cost savings to the city and its bidders, and the signatory parties have made numerous considerations for many other items on the projects performed by other workers as well. These PLAs have not only saved our town money, but they've put wages into the pockets of those that vote on our bond issues, send our kids to school, pay local taxes, fight our fires, and choose to live here in Juneau in spite of this being one of the most expensive places in the country. We believe that they've worked well and will continue to meet the public interest. Each of these PLAs has been effective on two fronts. One is that the jobs done under them have been under or close to budget, and the other is that they have provided our town with the only legal method of ensuring that local and non-local construction firms hire local people to build its projects. Two very major goals have been achieved utilizing this tool. It would seem that the public interest has been met. We here at the Juneau and Vicinity Construction and Building Trades Council are proud to have delivered the above-mentioned projects on time and within budget, guaranteeing labor peace and utilizing an available and adequate supply of highly trained, skilled, and tested craft workers, which we believe has provided the people of Juneau with lower costs over the lifetime of these completed projects. This being said, we believe it's in the public interest to stipulate to a PLA for AGEA and request it be added to this legislation. I would like to show the committee members a little bit of Alaska history. The Alaska Pipeline Project Agreement, which worked well then, and we believe on a project of this magnitude, a PLA would work well again. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Notar. Questions for Mike, for comments? Yes.
Throughout the, this Vic Coring, the Chairman of the Oil and Gas Committee, throughout the course of the testimony in the last couple of days, or since Wednesday, I guess, we've been hearing a lot of folks from various union organizations that request that PLA language be written into the legislation. For the benefit of us here, who might be a little bit rusty on that, including myself, can you remind us precisely what a PLA is and how would that be to our benefit to have that written into the legislation? Mike, thank you.
A project labor agreement is an agreement between the contractor and the respective unions, and it defines the terms and conditions of the work that's going to be performed, setting out uniform wage rates and work rules.
Yeah, the other half of my question is how would we benefit by having that written into the AGEA legislation, in your opinion?
You would have certainty. You'd have us with the ability to train skilled workers. This project, at the very best, probably most, at the very best, is 6 to 8 years off. And we'd like a little bit of that same stability and predictability that the oil companies are demanding.
I was going to just make a comment that I'm sure union participation would be, you know, to the benefit of the construction line, because there are large labor pools out there, very skilled workers. So I certainly recognize that. And thank you, Mike, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Mike. And with that, it appears we do not have anyone else online. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, at this time, I'd like to give Representative Coring a chance to comment before we close out.
Thank you, sir. Just to say thanks again for you, Senator Huggins, for working with the Oil and Gas Committee with the joint meetings. We look forward to continue working with you on the development of this important legislation.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I'm remiss earlier, my good friend and colleague from District 15 in the Valley, Mark Newman, joined us much earlier. And Mark, welcome. Glad to have you with us today. With that, just to announce that for Senate Resources next week, we'll be meeting each day of the week. Times to be announced. We passed a calendar out on that. In addition, we have scheduled meetings for next Saturday, so just for your planning purposes. So, as I said earlier, we will break until 2:45 to allow the room to get reset. ConocoPhillips will then present to us, and we certainly welcome those members of the Oil and Gas Special Committee from the House to remain with us if you so desire. But if not, we say thank you very much. And once again, on behalf of all Alaskans, thanks each of you for what you're doing and continue to do on behalf of our effort to get a natural gas pipeline for our state. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
Thank you. Good luck in the game.
Yeah, thanks.
Go down, make 2 o'clock.